Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Football Garbage Time NFL Podcast. This is Evan Review. I'm Goon Wong, the editor-in-chief of Football Garbage Time, and with me is Ryan Whitfield, senior staff writer on Football Garbage Time. So tell me, Ryan, did you have a good weekend? Did you enjoy the football games this weekend?
Yeah, I did. I was actually on my way back from a wedding Sunday morning, so I missed the first half of the 1 o'clock games. But it was a pretty decent weekend. I was home in time for the Pats, so that's always good.
Right. Well, that was an interesting game in and of itself because of Landry Jones, and I do want to talk about Landry Jones a little bit later on. But I can tell you this: I was stuck on an airplane coming back from London, and I only had one game that I could watch on the way back here, and that was the Vikings and the Eagles. What a horrible game to be stuck watching on a plane. I can tell you that was more torture than I could ever ask for. And then after that, we saw the Steelers and the Patriots, which was actually a lot better. But I do want to talk a little bit about the Giants and Rams because, you know, being in London, I had a chance to talk to people there about what their perception was of the NFL, and I thought that was very interesting. But I'm glad you got back and got a chance to see some of the games, got to see your beloved Pats again dominate. It looked like perhaps Landry Jones might give them a run for their money. We'll get to that in a little bit. But let's just get right to it. I mean, we have a lot to talk about today, so let's get to the game. So the first game I actually want to talk about is actually the Giants at the Rams. And this was actually in London on Sunday morning. And I don't really care so much about the game because, like I said, honestly, both of them were bad. Did you get a chance to catch any of this or see any of the highlights, Ryan?
Yeah, I watched the highlight packages, so grateful I didn't waste my time watching the game.
Right. It was one of those things where I felt like I wanted the hours back that I spent watching the game. So I will say this. So the reason why I raised this game is not to talk about how bad Case Keenum is or how bad Eli is or, you know, what each of these teams are going to do going into the future, because I don't see any of them having a shot at the postseason at this point. But about the NFL in London. So what's interesting to me is that during this, I was in London last week for another reason, and I happened to be talking to a lot of people in London about what their perception of the NFL was. And I can tell you that I didn't meet a single native Brit who actually wanted to go watch the NFL game. Anybody I talked to, if they were living in London, they were expats from the U.S., or they were people from the United States. In fact, it was swarming with New Yorkers on Saturday and Sunday. There really weren't a whole lot of people in England who were actually concerned about this. And when I asked them about, well, are you guys psyched about the fact that the NFL has come here so often? And, of course, as you know, Ryan, they're going back there again next week. And the response was, well, I guess because there's more people here spending money, but really no one cared about the NFL. And they said the problem was there was too many stops and starts. So let me ask you this question, Ryan. You know, do you think that the NFL can be successful outside the United States? And do you think there are too many stops and starts in NFL games today?
Yeah, I've heard the same criticism, and I think it starts from, it's kind of funny, the two different perceptions. You know, for much of us, you know, during the international tournaments, I can get into soccer, but typically, you know, a 1-0 or 1-0 or 2-1, you know, game of soccer is not very entertaining to most of us Americans.
Right.
Inversely, they kind of perceive it over there as, well, they watch a game for 90 minutes, which is nonstop action, even if there's not a lot of scoring, and they can't perceive
right.
even, you know, how we watch a game that has, you know, that they run a play for 5 seconds and then you have 35 seconds for a play to happen again. So,
right.
I think that's always going to be a huge international hurdle for the NFL is overcoming kind of that style of gameplay that just for whatever reason doesn't translate really outside the United States. I think another huge issue is that they don't force any marquee matchups in London. They roll out, you know, a couple of excuse the phrase dog crap matchups every year, and
that's a technical term, of course, dog crap.
Right, and I think their almost arrogance of the league office is that these other countries will be so grateful and so amazed at the spectacle of having a football game, they won't really care about the quality on the field. You know, it's a huge issue. I think, you know, we've talked about it, the ratings, several times. And, you know, I know that this quote has been rehashed a lot the last couple weeks, but, you know, the infamous quote from Mark Cuban a couple years ago of, you know, pigs get fat and hogs get slaughtered. And that's kind of what the NFL is kind of reaching now. These Thursday night matchups used to be actually some good games, and the quality of play has gotten so bad, and the London games were fun there for a little bit, and now their quality of play, you know, the prospect of waking up and having football from 10 o'clock until 11 o'clock on Sunday used to be great, except for the game in London, so bad you don't even want to turn it on. And then the last part I'll touch on, what you had said quickly, just with the, do I think there's too many stops and starts? And I absolutely do. It's a major problem in the NFL. It's something that I think replay has bastardized sports all throughout America. I was a big proponent of replay, but replay is there to correct major mistakes that change the outcomes of games. And what we have now is we're trying to correct every human error to the point that it's completely slowed down the product that we're watching. And that was never the spirit of the rule. You know, the spirit was that if, you know, there's an egregious, you know, a guy steps out at the 5 and it should have clearly been caught and he takes it in, you know, for a touchdown in a close playoff game at the end, we want that reviewed. But the fact that, you know, we're reviewing everything now, and the penalties have gotten out of control. You know, the new one you're seeing this year a lot is the Patriots actually benefited from it Sunday. On the second Steelers touchdown, Jamie Collins drew a holding call when he was never even held. It's the refs see a defensive lineman go down now, and they're not looking to see if he lost his footing. They're not looking to see if the hands are actually on the outside of the jersey, if there's any kind of tug. They see a defensive lineman go down in a battle with an offensive lineman, and they're too quick to throw the flag, and you get a holding, it wiped out a touchdown, and that was pretty much the end of the Steelers shot in that game. So there's a slew of mistakes and a slew of things slowing down the league, and, you know, none bigger than the one I've complained about for years, the touchdown, and then you go to commercial and you come back and you get the kickoff, which is pretty much a dead play now because the NFL is trying to push them out. Right, and then you got another commercial. And now you've been sitting here for 10 minutes and you've seen one play, and the NFL wants to know why its ratings are going down, why people are going to red zone, because who has 10 minutes to sit around to watch one play?
Yeah, I can second all of that because of the fact that I can tell you that this year I decided not to get red zone. I just had the Sunday ticket package so I could watch all the different games. And I miss red zone because there's so many stops and starts. I feel like I'm switching games like every 5 seconds. I mean, unless it's a Bears game, and that's hard enough to watch. I mean, I only watch because I'm a fan, but it's hard enough to watch. But, you know, I feel like I'm changing it every 5 seconds because, like you say, you're going to commercial break over and over again. Suffice to say that all these problems with stopping and starting, all these problems with the excessive penalties was ruining the game of football. And this is their reaction from those over in the UK to football. They just think that we're crazy that we actually even watch this. And I'm starting to think they might be right. So let's move on to the next issue here and ring the bell on that one. Talk about the Seattle Seahawks at the Arizona Cardinals. So this was a really bizarre game. we haven't had one of these in a while. Seahawks and Cardinals ended up tying 6-6 in overtime. Wow, a lot of stuff to talk about. But why don't you go ahead and get us started, Ryan. What are your thoughts on this game?
You know, I'm very much against the opinion of most people. I thought it was a great game.
Really?
I grew up playing defense. I love defensive football. I don't like sloppy offensive mistakes. You know, I don't like watching those games where it's just two teams who just can't move the ball. And that's not what I saw Sunday night. What I saw was two teams that were literally slugging it out. That was Holyfield Tyson. With a lot of money on the line in a title weight fight. I thought that's probably the most physical game I've seen since the 2014 Super Bowl between the Patriots and the Seahawks, where every single play was like a car crash. Every yard was fought for and earned for. So, you know, I get the commentary of people of the 3-3 at the end of the game, the 6-6, and what a boring What a boring game it was because there's not a lot of scoring. But, you know, I'm actually not a guy who hates every once in a while a good defensive fight. So I think you saw some ineptness. You know, I've been kind of on this most this year that I'm starting to kind of come around to the fact that I don't think Bruce Arians is a really good coach. I think that he's better than a lot of the crap bags in the NFL, but I don't think that he's an elite coach. I think there was, you know, I mean, anytime you outgain and outpossess your opponent twofold, you should not come out of the game in a 6-6 tie. So, you know, David Johnson, you know, and this is one of my PPR leagues, but I had him in a PPR league. He put up 24 points this weekend. It is, for you, those of you who play fantasy out there, it is pretty hard, even in a PPR league, for a running back to put up 24 points without ever getting into the end zone. I mean, he alone had about, I think, 160 yards from scrimmage again. So a lot of missed opportunities, a lot of bad play calling. You know, there'd be a drive where they were running the ball really well, and then they would all of a sudden go on a, you know, a stretch of three plays where they tried to pass it and they'd go incomplete, or they'd have a series where they were passing really well, and then inexplicably they get to the 40 and they'd run on first and second down, get no yards, and then incomplete on third down. So it was like they kind of had no feel for what was working on each drive. So they would move the ball a ton, but then they couldn't finish drives. So I thought that all of that was really interesting. And then, you know, for me personally, God, did I love that ending. First of all, you got the mental midget Cantanzaro out there. Well, actually, let me take it back one play. So David Johnson, for those of you who watched, I think actually did score a touchdown on that run.
Okay.
I think his foot hit the pylon simultaneous with the out of bounds line, which means that at that point that the goal line stretches infinitely. And I think the ball, because he was kind of bent in a weird position, and I think he actually did cross the goal line with the ball there. Either way, you'd want to give it a little bit of time to get reviewed.
Yep.
But instead, Arizona tried to run up and quick snap and run the ball, and they get stuffed. And
yep.
then they decide to kick on third down, even though Cantanzaro has been awful. So they do that. They somehow get a delay of game and all this. I mean, just – and this is start top to bottom coaching. Everything's just falling apart, and it's just – it's beautiful.
Well,
and then he comes up and they –
Well, I think the falling apart part was what people were complaining about. They felt like it wasn't quality football. I mean, maybe on defense, you're right. There were some good defensive plays, but that the offensive play calling was actually not great, and that made for a low-quality product.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was pretty great until this point. It was just – this was just the ultimate choke job down the line, and I don't know, maybe I'm just a sadist, but I was in all my glory. And so you got Cantanzaro comes up and, you know, doinks it off the upright like a jack wagon, and then the constant cuts to his face as Seattle's just driving the ball, and you can literally see his soul breaking, and it's hilarious.
Yeah.
And they come down, and then Hauschka – somehow kicks it. I think it was a 22-yard kick, and he misses. He shanks it so bad he misses the net. And then a Pete Carroll doing his best, you know, to the, again, 2014 Super Bowl reference, oh no face from the Malcolm Butler interception. I mean, and the whole way down, because he's such a, you know, kind of a tool, that he's sitting there, he's doing this Pete Carroll thing where he's pumping his fist and he's high-fiving, he's having a good time because he thinks they're driving to win. And then you see his heart break as it goes. And it was great tragedy, great comedy, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. Best 6-6.
Well, you definitely
took
a lot more out of the game than I did. But hey, more power to you, man. I'm glad you found that to be a good one. But let me ask you this one quick question: do you think that the NFL should have ties, or do you think there should be some way of getting to sudden death in order to finish the game?
I think absolutely. I know every time this happens, people kind of scream and holler about it, but it happens about once a year, once every 2 years. And at the end of the day, the physical toll these guys take on their bodies, you can't have, if they had unending or unlimited overtimes, and you did get a situation where somehow a team ended up in seven, you know, playing seven quarters, that their team would not be ready to play the next week. So I think it's the only way to do it. And it doesn't happen very often.
What about the college way of doing it? You know, starting at the 25-yard line, going back and forth, everyone gets an opportunity. You know, I mean, it's kind of the football equivalent of goal kicks, you know?
Yeah,
how about that instead of what they do now?
Yeah, maybe it's a traditionalist thing in me, or maybe because it's done that way in college, I view it as sophomore. But I think for any any true football fan, we'd feel a lot the way that the NHL fans feel about the shootout. That's just kind of a gimmicky way to end.
I agree.
Yeah.
Yep. All right, so let's ring the bell on that one. Let's move on. next game that we have on the list is the Oakland Raiders at the Jacksonville Jaguars. The Raiders end up dominating, no surprise there, 33-16. There's a lot of plenty of scoring there, lots of lines there. But you wanted to talk about Gus Bradley, is that right? You know, tell us a little bit about what you want to talk about here in this game.
Yeah, I mean, I think this guy is just, you know, a further extension of what I've been talking about the coaching issue in the NFL. This is a guy who now has a 12-38 regular season record, which is, for those of you keeping track of you mathematicians out there, that's a 241 percentage. if any of us were 240% successful at our jobs, we would have been fired after six months.
Not even a
he's
good
been there for
average.
A few years now. Right. I mean, it's just, you know, anyone who listens to this show has heard me rally or rail on Jeff Fisher for his 500 record, and he's, you know, twice as good as Gus Bradley.
That's a bad place to be. Do you think it was his fault though that his players got tossed out? You know, you got Malik Jackson tossed in the fourth quarter, later in the quarter, Jalen Ramsey thrown out for fighting. Do you think that was something in part due to Gus Bradley's management or his coaching?
You know, one of those things that, you know, attitude reflects leadership. But I kind of sometimes just break it down to a simple thing. And I get in a fight with sports fans a lot of times where I try to view things as much as possible from the bigger picture. And if you look at each individual instance or instance that he's gone through in his coaching career, and I'm sure you can explain away all of them. You can say, well, this guy got out of control here, or this wasn't his fault on this one, or, well, this was his thought process here. But when you take a step back and look at it from 10,000 feet, you look at a guy who now, it seems like Blake Bortles is regressing. Allen Robinson was on pace for 1,000 yards and 10 touchdowns, I believe, 2 years ago before his injury. Last year had 14 touchdowns and 1,400 yards on 80 receptions. And this year has 300 yards receiving and 3 touchdowns pretty much to the midway point. So he's on track for about 606. I mean, so your players are regressing. Chris Ivory was a 1,000-yard rusher, and albeit he's been dealing with his medical illness he had that I don't know if it was disclosed. But even when he's been in there, he's on pace for well below that 1,000 yards. The defense they invested a lot of money into this year. You've had a lot of good picks there, and they don't get better, and it seems like they almost get worse. You know, a lot of people, including myself, bought hard on that team this year. And I really thought after two wins that this was their chance to kind of make that step. You had the 32nd ranked pass defense come into town, and I thought that Hearns, Julius Thomas, and Robinson would have a feast this weekend, and it was the same old, same old. So you put all this talent there, and it's not working. So I think fortunately, you got to kind of clean house again, fire the GM, fire the head coach, fire the coordinators, and, you know, bring in a new regime and hope they can turn some of these guys around because there's a lot of talent on that team, and then hopefully kind of rebuild for the future now.
Right, and I think Blake Bortles, I agree with you, is not the future for them. And actually, when asked about it, Gus Bradley did say yesterday that he, quote, firmly believes in Blake Bortles. Without a doubt, he thinks it was a challenging day on Sunday about some of the situations they were in. But as far as the competitor and what he brings to the team, there is no doubt about Bortles. Now, I think there's a lot to doubt about Bortles. He's had plenty of time to get into this and become a better quarterback. He had a great matchup this week against the Oakland Raiders, was unable to take advantage of that. So I agree, there should be some shakeup down in Jacksonville. Let's move on to our next game of the day, and that is the Minnesota Vikings and the Philadelphia Eagles. And as I mentioned earlier, what a painful game this was to watch. I really did not enjoy much of it. The final score, Eagles 21, Vikings 10. Don't let the score fool you. The Eagles were in control basically the entire game, but they were both horrific in the first quarter. Let me ask you this question, Ryan. Are the Vikings actually not that good, or are the Eagles actually good? I mean, what's going on here? Because, you know, the Vikings came into this 5-0 and looked horrible playing against the Eagles.
Yeah, I would go with that. Both teams are good, not great. Mm-hmm. I think both teams have built something pretty good and have taken good steps forward this year and should be viable NFC candidates going forward in the next couple of years. As far as the Vikings, You're on the road. You have a quarterback who's susceptible to bad games, who's played above his head this year, so maybe that's water reaching its level a little bit. But also, he's also a guy that doesn't always strike me as a real gamer or somebody that rises to the occasion. So maybe the moment of trying to stick it to his old team kind of got to him. So, I'm not going to too many X's and O's with these two. I think both of them will be playoff teams. I don't think either one's a real Super Bowl contenders because I think they're just both, good teams, not great. The only thing elite on either of these teams is that Vikings defense.
Yeah, I agree with that. The Vikings defense definitely carries that team, and Bradford, maybe he'll get better. I've never been convinced that he's the answer going forward. He's kind of fooled us a little bit over the first couple starts, but I don't think he's going to be the answer long term. Unfortunately, I also don't think Teddy Bridgewater is the answer either. But let's move on to our next game. So now let's talk about the Houston Texans at the Denver Broncos on the Monday night game. Complete blowout. The Texans start off strong, look like they're actually going to get somewhere, score 6 points in the first quarter via two field goals, and then the Broncos basically take over from that point. And they end up winning 27-9, very handily. The notable thing here, Brock Osweiler, multi-million-dollar man, going to the Texans, off the Broncos, heir apparent in the Broncos, now leaving Trevor Siemian there. Trevor Siemian looking way, way better than Brock. What do you think? Is Brock Osweiler actually this bad? Or is there some possibility that for a little bit of seasoning, he can be a serviceable NFL quarterback?
I think he could be serviceable. I think something stinks in Houston right now. If you watched the game last night or listen to any sports talk today, the huge story coming out is the whole kind of tidbit that was leaked last night by McDonough and Gruden about that they actually never met with Osweiler before they signed him, that they threw all this money at him based on watching game films. They never kind of vetted him. Never kind of had him look at their playbook and went over it with him, see if he'd fit the system. They kind of just looked at his 7 games in Denver and said, oh, yeah, here's a boatload of money. So what that sounds like is that the owner there, McNair, came down and said, after years and years and years of owning this team, I'm tired of the fact that my best ever quarterback was, probably Carr, but, he didn't have a team around him then. But the most successful quarterback that's been here is Schaub, who isn't very good. So I don't care what you got to do. I'm tired of playing the T.J. Yates and the Brian Hoyers. So
Ryan Mallett.
Go get me this quarterback. Ryan Mallett, right. So it sounded like that's kind of a top-down thing, and it sounds like the coaches and maybe the GM and the scouts and everybody are kind of leaking it out now to the press that, hey, well, this isn't our mess. We didn't want this guy.
Right. Yeah, they're making some excuses for sure.
So there's definitely some dissension there in the organization, which isn't good. And you got this guy locked up for $40 million for a couple years. Billy O'Brien's also he's a good coach, but he's also stubborn and hard-headed. And it feels like he really needs to dial back the playbook a little bit and get and make it simpler instead of just trying to make Brock Osweiler what he wants to be. He needs to work with him to become that. And then, unfortunately, I got to say one slash real quick. Our boy Will Fuller there. The dropsies are coming back, and that was the big knock on him coming out of school. And that ball last night, I have a 5-year-old. If my 5-year-old dropped that ball playing catch in the yard, he'd be running laps. So there's no excuse for Will Fuller dropping that ball.
Totally agree with everything you said there. So let's go ahead and move on to the last topic that we have before we get to our too legit to quit, can't touch this segment, and that's Arian Foster announcing his retirement after 8 seasons in the NFL. He says on his statement that there comes a time in every athlete's career when their ambition and their body are no longer on the same page. My father always said, you'll know when it's time to walk away. It's never been more clear than right now. Foster just turned 30 in August. He had multiple injuries, obviously, over the last couple of years, including hamstring and groin injuries. He ended up amassing a lot of yards as a rushing and as a receiver, 88 total touchdowns, a very impressive career in his stretch with the Texans, but he was injured a lot. So tell me, what do you think? Was this the right decision by Arian Foster to retire?
Absolutely. Can't stay healthy. It's unfortunate because he was one of my favorite players, one of my favorite running backs. And unfortunately, his time of being elite is going to be too short for him to ever. He'll be one of those guys that you talk about in the same breath of, the Bo Jacksons or you know, guys of this caliber that were great running backs or great players, but they'll, you know, he's certainly not a Hall of Famer. Unfortunately, if Corey Dillon's not in the Hall of Fame, then Arian Foster
yep.
doesn't have a shot, which sucks because his talent level was Hall of Fame worthy.
Yeah, and he's great. He's quite a great story, undrafted, a free agent, and making his way up into the lineup like he did. I think that was absolutely fantastic. Really enjoyed it. All right, so that's time for us to switch pace here and move on to our too legit to quit or can't touch this segment, where we go through a couple quick rapid-fire people or teams, and we get our opinions on whether we think they are good or really not that good. So let's get it rolling. All right, Ryan, so first on our too legit to quit or can't touch this segment is Jay Ajayi. 2 weeks with over 200 yards on the ground. Now the main guy back there in Miami with Arian Foster's retirement. What do you think about him? Too legit to quit or can't touch this?
Well, I'm going can't touch this because I'm so sick of Miami and their running backs. you know, we went through this for a couple years with Lamar Miller. Ronnie Brown before that. I mean, they have these guys that flash, and for whatever reason, they put too much faith in Tannehill. They refuse to commit to the run. So I think he has a good skill set. Yeah, but I thought that all year. I picked him up weeks ago when Arian Foster went down. They didn't want to use the guy. He looked good in flashes last year. I think he's got talent, but Lamar Miller's already proven what a workhorse he can be in Houston. And he wasn't really given that same opportunity in Miami. I don't know if what's wrong with it down there, if they just don't trust the running backs in the heat or what it is. But I think for now you got to say, can't touch this.
All right. So next person on the list, and this will be interesting because I watched all of this game, and I'm sure you did too because it was against the Pats. But Landry Jones, starting out kind of rough, but ending up looking competent at the end. What do you think? Landry Jones, too legit to quit or can't touch this?
Yeah, can't touch this. When he had to make the big throws, he couldn't make them. The interception of Malcolm Butler, good play by Malcolm Butler, but a worse play by Landry Jones. That's a bad throw. And the Patriots' game plan was pretty simple. They weren't going to let Antonio Brown or Sammy, had he been healthy, or Le'Veon Bell get behind him, and they were going to make Landry prove that he could drive the ball down the field in 10 and 12 play drives. Without making a mistake to score a touchdown. He's only able to do it once.
Yeah, I agree with that, but it's definitely a can't-touch-the situation. But I think there's some possibility that he can become serviceable over time because he definitely kept Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown relevant with his gameplay during against a pretty solid defense in the New England Patriots. So let's move on to the last one, and that's Jacquizz Rodgers, in light of the injury to Doug Martin, a hamstring injury, really tricky. He may not be coming back. Jacquizz Rodgers, again, goes for 154 yards on 26 carries. So tell me, what do you think? Jacquizz Rodgers, can't touch this, too legit to quit, or can't touch this?
I'm going on a clean sweep of can't touch this week. I've been on Alan Rodgers in the past. I've been on him in the past, and he hasn't shown me it yet, so... I know he's had a couple good games in a row here, but I need to see it for about, give me a nice 8 to 10 game sample of this and I'll buy in.
Yeah, I agree. Jacquizz Rodgers has had his opportunities in Atlanta where they were big on him. He got some opportunities there. Then he went to Chicago, fell flat on his face, didn't really get anything there. I do think he has some potential to be decent, but I don't think he's going to be an every down back going forward. All right. That's all the time we have for this week, and that is the end of our Too Legit to Quit and Can't Touch This segment. So, Ryan, give us your Twitter account so people can follow you.
Yes, it's at Ryan Whitfield, N-E.
All right. So everyone sign up. Make sure to follow Ryan. He's always got the he's always happy to engage all the fans out there and talk about his Pats as well as other controversial things every NFL Sunday. You can follow me at FB Garbage Time. And until next week, enjoy the rest of your NFL week. And, of course, most importantly to me, go Cubs. Win that World Series. Break that 188-year curse. Theo Epstein probably going to be the greatest man ever in baseball if he can help the Red Sox and Cubs break their curse. Yep.
Hey, real quick. Go Tribe, go.
Oh, my gosh. All right, fine. We'll let that one slide. Until next week. Thank you.
Thank you.